As you may have noticed, I have changed the title of my presentation to something I thought reflected more what I'm going to talk about. It's now going to be called A Tale of Two Cities, and the subtitle is Digital and Physical Communities. So, as you all know, I've been asked to tell a story about my project, to give it some sort of narrative. This approach seems really fitting for the particular project I work on, which is a storytelling project. Having spent about 9 months now sort of talking to people about the ways in which they shape their stories and give form to their stories, I was really pleased to have the opportunity to write a story of my own and to give my project strand lines some sort of narrative. So I asked myself, what sort of narrative can I make of the quite messy history of Strandlines, my memories of working on the project and the memories of people who I've been involved with. And I was first reminded, really, of Christopher Booker's popular and very lengthy study, Seven Basic Plots, published in 2004. And I wondered whether one of the taxonomies by which he suggests all literary plots fall might be used to describe Strandlines. Could I use, say, the overcoming of the monster? Could I use rags to riches, the quest, the voyage and return, comedy, tragedy, rebirth? Well, one may as well begin, I think, with a narrative presented in the original funding bid to JISC in 2010. One major activity of Strandlines, as presented in the bid, was to collect stories about the busy London road, the Strand, and its surrounding areas. These would be life stories and memories, or, as I'll explain later, more creative pieces penned and sometimes spoken by residents and workers in the Strand area. The stories would be uploaded by local groups and individuals to a website, www.strandlines.net. The aim of the project is not simply just collecting and collecting and collecting and collecting. That wouldn't be a terribly compelling story to tell funding bodies, and I imagine we probably wouldn't have got any funding if we'd told that particular story. As the literary critic Frank Commode says, we need a sense of an ending to give a story meaning. So what was the sense of the ending we presented in our funding bid? Well, the principal narrative laid out in the grant application is one, I think, of a quest. I've got a sort of some sort of representation of a quest here. Quest, a teleological story geared towards a particular end or aim. The end, it seems, was not merely collecting and collecting and collecting, but of facilitating, I quote, sense of community around a transient area, around a place that for many was just a thoroughfare. Yes, as I say, the Strand was initially thought of as a very transient area, people coming and going, having little sense of how their lives cross with others. And some of those lives that cross were the lives of staff and students at King's College London, which is where I'm from. And the idea was to connect the academic world to local groups and to connect local groups together. And to give a little context, this is really, as I'm sure many of you know, it's not really a new aim for a sort of quest. I've got Strandlines, but I was also just having a look at other websites. Hearts Memories, they promise that by adding life stories to a digital archive, participants will develop a sense of community identity, and the Scottish Storytelling Centre claims that it's face-to-face relation, not digital relation, that builds sense of community between tellers and listeners. So it's both a physical kind of, the physical and digital projects are both highlighting this idea of sense of community. You might notice that there's a difference between these kind of stories and the picture of the quest that I showed you. It's very clear what the goal or the aim of the knight in the picture is. It's the damsel, a physical, tangible, material thing. And one of the sort of dragons, I suppose, if we continue with the quest idea, the dragons that we have to tackle is the idea that the sense of community, we don't know what it is. It's something which is kind of ephemeral, it's abstract, it's not necessarily a thing, but it's a kind of experience or maybe a state of being. What is this sense of community? There's an extra problem where Strandlines was concerned, because we're not just dealing with one type of community. As the picture I showed you suggests, we've got physical community to deal with. We've also got the digital community that we set up on the website. So there's a physical strand made of sort of bricks and concrete and stone, and then there's the strand as represented by the stories of people who add to it, people who upload online. How do they interact? One of the initial ideas was that the project would connect people living in a physical community in the area around the strand through digital community. The digital would give local groups and individuals a space which they could visit in their own time anonymously if they wished to meet and to interact. And here we encounter another dragon. The idea that the digital might act as a sort of seedbed for the physical was problematic because many of the communities we decided to work with weren't particularly well-versed in the digital. Many did not know how to use computers, many did not have computers, and in some cases it wasn't really a question of cannot, some just would not, they did not want to use computers. So the groups we particularly worked with were a homeless group based at the connection at St Martin's in the Fields. We also worked with an elderly group based at Age Concern Day Centre. And we also worked with a group at Peabody Housing Estate, which was near the Strand area. Had we started maybe working with sort of the Strand's banks and businesses, I mean, we're thinking the Savoy Hotel, it's got many embassies, Coutts Bank is based on the Strand, we might have had less difficulties, we might have been able to use, say, social networking sites, that kind of thing. But with communities we worked with, we had to adopt a different approach. We actually had to start really basically analog methods. We made postcards, which we set up in different community areas. If anyone wanted to contact us, I have a story that I'd like to share with you. They added their contact details and they put the postcard in a postbox that we made for them in their community centres. Then we could meet with them, we could organise group activities. We found because a lot of people weren't online, the physical ended up being the precursor to digital. We had to meet with people, have sort of series of events and sessions and classes to begin with. Okay. But this was not the only difficulty encountered. One problem was we had to sort of sell the project to them. I mean, why write about the Strand? A lot of people we were engaging with, they didn't identify with the Strand. They identified with, say, central London or Covent Garden and very nearby or Holborn. So why the Strand? So one of the things we really had to do is to give a sense of why the Strand was important. I mean, I think it was quite telling that, say, the tourist shops on the Strand, they're selling key rings for, say, Oxford Circus and Trafalgar Square, Buckingham Palace, the Strand's not on there. So we kind of need to do something about that to sort of explain why. The past was very important here. We did a lot of some sessions, and it was as academics might actually, I suppose, thinking about the many stories that the Strand had to offer. So we had the Strand's lost theatres. It had lots of old music halls. We had famous people. That's Dr. Johnson, who put together the dictionary. We had sort of things that weren't there anymore. So this is the Maypole, biggest maypole in London, where the church, St Mary the Strand, now stands, 18th century church. And also amazing places like Necropolis. Necropolis wasn't on the Strand, but a train a train that left Waterloo Station brought the Strand's dead to Necropolis, the city of the dead, and the carriages were divided into first, second, and third class. So those sort of stories really captured the imaginations of people. The thing we wanted really to do, though, is we wanted to convey a sense that though we had archives and archives and archives of stories about the Strand in the past and past Strand lines, what we didn't have was the lives of people in the present. And what we really wanted to do is show them how, by contributing their stories, they could overlay them sort of on the top of the sort of past narratives we were presenting. And we found that could be often quite meaningful. So one thing actually that we did with, say, the homeless communities, we decided to make a digital walk with them. Which would be something that would bring together historical stories with their own personal stories, sort of sleeping in the area where the soup runs were, that kind of thing. We started out with some historical research. We looked at Charles Booth's online archive, Charles Booth, late 19th century, went around London and he sort of tracked where poverty was in the area, and he sort of coloured this map where sort of black areas would denote areas of most poverty and the yellow areas most affluent areas. And we sort of explored that with people at the homeless charity. And we also had a look at Charles Booth's walks around the Strand area. He walked around the Strand area with a police officer, and he draws out the walk that he took. So the Strand's just down there. And what we did is we found out what Charles Booth saw. So, for example, he found that there were less prostitutes on the Strand than in Soho, for example, because there was a particularly lenient magistrate in Soho and there was not a particularly lenient magistrate on the Strand. And with, say, Google Maps, we constructed a walking tour, adding Charles Booth's manuscript entries, but then also adding on top the memories of people living, sleeping on the Strand in the present. And we constructed this walking tour, the Rags and Riches digital walking tour, which was replete with audio recordings and images and stories. So that was one of the things that we did. It's probably kind of quite significant here that we decided to call it Rags and Riches rather than Rags to Riches. I think that's kind of a nice way of thinking about the narrative we sort of presented the Strand in general. We didn't want to present an overwhelmingly sort of positive idea of the Strand that people would grab and actually create a sense of community by suggesting the Strand was some wonderful, wonderful place. And we really didn't want to eradicate conflicts at all, but really get people talking about them. As you see, the Strand is seen in a very mixed way. Some people say it's unsung and undersung. Some people say it's a rather sad place. Some people talk about layers of history. Often people say it's a bit tacky. Some call it the portal to the true London. Some say it's a place between places fighting against its non-placeness. That's a student's view. And somebody in Covent Garden Age Concern Group said it's not for us. So we really wanted to sort of pull out those threads, which were not overwhelmingly positive necessarily. Okay, so we were looking to show the Strand as a place which had many, many stories. I'm emphasising stories particularly because what we found was that what we wanted to avoid was sort of flying in, taking a story from someone, and then that was it. If any sort of community was going to generate, what we needed to do with a sort of sustainable storytelling, people telling a story and then another story and then another story, and we telling them a story back and having an exchange of sorts. And for this kind of method, I was really inspired by popular book now, it's been very influential, Marcel Mauss's book, The Gift, I'm sure some of you know it, in the 1920s. And Mauss talks about the importance of gift giving, the process by which one gift begets another, begets another, begets another, in building community, or the word he uses, commonality. And in this quotation, he talks about if you refuse to give a gift, that's tantamount to declaring war and rejecting the bond of alliance and commonality. And I really like his particular idea because it kind of brushes away this sort of idyllic ideas of community as a sort of they all lived happily ever after kind of idea. It's kind of a community which is built on obligations. So what I was hoping was that through the exchange of stories, people might build up obligations to one another. So how to do that? How to get out of that model where somebody gives you their memory and they say, bye, that's it. Well, the tagline for the Strandlines project was, when the tagline was Strandlines project, was Lives on the Strand, Past, Present, and Creative. And it was creativity, I found, and a movement from memory to creativity, which helped build sort of sustainable storytelling. And I just want to sort of give you a few examples. Can I just ask, how late are we running at the
beginning? Just about 5 minutes, but you've got about 5 minutes left.
I've got 5 minutes left. Oh, crikey, okay. I'll just give you a few examples of the sort of thing that we were doing. So with a walking tour, for example, we took audio recordings of people's personal stories, but I also wanted to take them to another place. So I had an idea of creating digital blue plaques in the area. Now, this proved, it really captured people's imaginations because it really got them thinking about how people's lives were memorialised on the Strand. The fact being with Blue Packs, you tend to be remembered if you had property or if you worked somewhere. So it was really nice people creating Blue Plaques and positioning them somewhere on the Strand. And it was interesting that you could do that in a place which was digital, but you couldn't do that somewhere which was physical. So that's one way in which I sort of tried to get people writing creatively about their lives. Another way was inspired by an upload to the website. Somebody went around, took pictures of lots and lots of Strand faces, including clock faces. And I think digital is really helpful for that, actually, when you're doing a sort of study of a place, because the digital is great for sort of collecting things and bringing things in different parts of one space together. And I used these pictures in creative writing, life writing classes, where we sort of asked the question, what does the face see? Which may seem fairly frivolous in some ways, but actually it was really, really helpful. For one thing, people could say, right from the perspective of the statue that stands on top of the Savoy, and could talk about social conflict and social divisions, but they could do it through the sort of the frame or protective sort of layer of character. So they could kind of get as angry as they like, and they could be a bit like the Happy Prince, if you've read Oscar Wilde's tale, when he looks down upon the poverty of the land and sort of describes what he sees and sees what he can do to help. So it was helpful on that level, and it was also really helpful for sort of thinking about the past of the area creatively. People could write about what this statue has seen over, say, 100 years, for example, and see what had changed. So that proved really, really helpful as well. And say, with a homeless creative writing group, we wrote a verse each and made it into a poem. So I won't go on. We made postcards as well, all sorts of things, but I'll skip all of that. The difficulty really lay in sort of once people had started telling stories and got used to storytelling, the idea was to connect the local groups together. And we found it was very, very difficult to do that online. People didn't tend to offer comments. In a way, sort of the comments were, it's something to do with the form of them. It maybe wasn't quite creative enough. So I ended in some activities which would connect the different storytelling groups together. For example, I did a session called Rubbish and Recycled Writing, where I had this idea of using, from the website, beginnings of stories of some local groups, scrunching them up, pretending that whoever was writing them didn't think it was any good, putting them into this sort of recycling waste paper bin, and then getting other groups to write the story which branches from the beginning of the story. So the idea of getting groups to offer stories, to answer stories, and that was very much linked to a decision we had at the end of the project to set up what we call the Cabinet of Artists, a group of songwriters, poets, storytellers, who could help us connect the different groups together and could also, again, answer stories with stories rather than sort of bitty comments. So we had a songwriter, for example. She wrote a song which answered somebody's digital walking tour point about sheltering in the Aldwych tube station at the age of four. And she wrote a song which was a sort of child song about staying in the tube station at sort of 4 years old. So what that did is it really sort of added value to the stories. It makes people feel that people were really, really listening. So that proved quite successful. Okay, I should probably sort of round up a little bit. Did we generate sort of active sense of community in the area? I really like the poster because they haven't got there yet. They're sort of still looking towards sort of the goal of the quest. I mean, I think the problem is we're not at the end of the project. And how do you know what the meaning of the project is until you reach the end? We're at the end of the pilot project, but we have lots and lots of other strands sort of beginning now. One of those is a project called SPICE, which is funded by the HRC, and the idea of that was about sort of connecting different community projects together. So I was yesterday in Yorkshire bringing some of my Strand communities up to Yorkshire and meeting with other groups from Sheffield and also from an Oxford boating community. And the idea is to exchange stories, exchange people, and see what works and kind of what doesn't work. And really, does that help create community? I think it's too early days, but I do think it gives people a sense of the sort of specialness of their place and sort of how sort of particular it is by comparing their place with the places of other people. And it just kind of consolidates some of the ideas we've sort of explored over the last 9 months about the importance of writing about one's place and oneself within one's place, and publishing that writing about it, and listening really, really carefully to the stories of other people, and that sort of continuous sort of exchange of stories and storytelling that I've been talking about. Thank you very, very much. Thank you.